Books of Elsewhere, Chapter 13, page 116. By the time Olive changed out of her wet clothes, Mr. Dunwoody had dinner ready. Mrs. Dunwoody lit a candle and gave it to Olive to place on the table. Olive helped set their places, poured everyone a glass of water, and even took seconds of lasagna. But through the whole meal, her mind was hopping from clue to clue like Super Ball. The paintings, the trapdoor in the basement, the necklace, which hung even now inside her T-shirt, the attic, and the someone else who protected it, like Horatio had said. She wasn't going to stop searching until she found a way into the attic and met that someone. Olive got so excited just thinking about this that she dropped her fork on the floor 3 times and knocked over the water just once, and luckily the glass was almost empty. After dinner, Mr. and Mrs. Dunwoody suggested that they all play 42, a more complicated version of 21 than Mr. and Mrs. Dunwoody had invented together back in their college days. Olive knew her only escape would be to say that she was too tired and wanted to head to bed, but this would have definitely made her parents suspicious, so she stayed. Her feet jittered impatiently under the table. At first, Mr. and Mrs. Dunwoody let Olive win most of the hands, but by 10:30, Olive lost her entire pile of paper clips and fell asleep in her chair, listening to the sounds of her parents whispering romantically about probabilities and numerical combinations. She woke up in her bed to the song of a robin and a beam of sunlight pouring in through a bedroom window. After shoveling down a heaping bowl of sugar puffy kitten bits, Olive scrambled up to the second floor. This time she had a new plan. An attic had to have a staircase or a ladder, and if there was a staircase, that meant there had to be a hollow spot within the walls. If she knocked the right spot, maybe she would hear it. Olive started into the upstairs hall. At the front of the house, she pressed her ear against the wall and tapped with her knuckles. The wall made a low, solid thump. She moved her ear a few inches to the left and tapped again. The wall here sounded the same, and Olive made her way slowly around the hallway corner, tapping and listening. She was near the painting of the strange bowl of fruit that she heard something else in the wall. It was muffled and very distant, but Olive recognized the sound. It was the whine of a dog. Olive held her breath. She slid her ear along the wall, and the whining sound grew fainter. On the other side of that wall was a pink room. Olive darted inside, catching the usual stale whiff of potpourri and mothballs. She put her ear to the pink wall, a few feet away from the huge painting of the ancient town with its giant stone archway. Nothing. No dog. Whining. No sound at all. She tapped gently. This time, instead of the solid thump, she heard a light, hollow knock. Her heart gave a happy jump. This painting was certainly large enough to hide a door. Olive yanked on the huge gold frame. It didn't budge. She wrapped her fingers around its edges and she pulled with all her strength. She might as well have been pulling on the wall itself. Olive gave a disappointed huff, and then a new idea floated across her mind. She put on the spectacles and she took a close look at the painting. Nothing changed. The distant trees around the town didn't shake their leaves. The tufts of the grass didn't move in a soft summer breeze. Cautiously, Olive put out her hand and she pushed her fingertips into the painting, right through the center of the giant stone archway, where the two stone soldiers glared down unchanging. Her hand went easily through, but she couldn't feel the Mediterranean sun on her skin or any change in the air. Olive braced herself on one side of the huge frame and pressed her face through the canvas. At first, all she could see was darkness. She wasn't in the ruins of a Roman village. She wasn't in a painting at all. She was looking through it, just like one of those sneaky mirrors that's actually a window. But there in the darkness on the other side of the painting was a thin strip of light. It ran along the bottom edge of an old wooden door. Just above it, a round brass doorknob gave off a reflected glint. With her heart doing a tap dance against her ribs, Olive stepped through the canvas into a bare wooden floor and grasped the handle. The door was heavy. At first it didn't budge, but Olive pulled with both arms and finally with a low vibrating creak, it swung toward her. The scent of dusty air, stale and ancient, swept through Olive like an invisible snow. A wooden staircase angled upward from the darkness into faint daylight. Olive shut the door behind her and climbed slowly up the narrow stairs. The steps were littered with papery bodies of dead wasps and bits of brittle sawdust. Olive hoped that there weren't any living wasps to worry about. She wasn't very good with insects. At the top of the stairs, she stood up and took off the spectacles and gave the room a long, careful look. The attic was surprisingly large. Round portal windows cut in each side let in streaks of dust and white sunlight. The ceiling angled sharply up to the point in the middle, with the sides of the room growing lower and lower, so that even a very small person would have had to crouch to reach the corners. But the room itself was not what caught Olive's attention. The attic was simply heaped with things. There were sewing mannequins and ancient tapestries, locked steamer trunks, glass-fronted cabinets, upholstered sofas draped with white sheets. There were giant gilt-framed mirrors and dusty dressers. There were the remnants of a Victorian washing machine, small battered cannon, and something that looked dauntingly like a dentist chair, or possibly a torture device. And slightly apart from everything else stood a tall, painted, spattered easel. Olive edged toward it. A low stool was positioned in front of the easel, and tubes of paints and bottles and powders were ranged along its tray. And to the right, a small table held jars full of brushes, more tubes of pigment, and a palette covered with blobs of dried paint. An oilcloth-draped canvas leaned against the easel's back. Olive reached out, and with the tips of her fingers, she lifted up the cloth and she peeped underneath. The painting on the easel was far from finished. A blue background, which could have been either a wall or the sky, hung behind a wide wooden table that filled the canvas from left to right. And on the table lay an open book. And on the book lay a pair of hands. And the wrist trailed off into the background toward a body that had not been painted. And that never would be painted, Olive realized. Her knees wobbling, she put on the spectacles and she looked more closely at the painting. And in an instant, the hands came to life, clenching the book. And then they moved hesitantly upward, patting at arm and face that were not there. Olive jumped away, dropping the cloth back over the canvas. Her stomach fizzed and clenched queasily as if a huge spider had just run over her skin. This was Aldous McMartin's studio. This was where he had worked. Ducking her head, Olive moved carefully along one wall, peeking beneath the dusty sheets. Yes, there were more of Aldous McMartin's paintings here, in frames of all different shapes and sizes. She was about to put the spectacles on again, and when a voice from above her hissed, "Oh-ho, a thieving scoundrel it is, have it thee?" Something landed on Olive's back and dug in with four pointy claws. "Ow!" exclaimed Olive, trying to shake the clinging thing off her shoulders. "Yah! Take that, ye scurvy knave!" shouted the thing triumphantly. "Let go of me!" Olive bellowed, giving the thing a solid thump against the nearby hat rack. The thing gave a yah and pulled its claws out of Olive's shirt. She turned just in time to see a furry-shaped dart up the hat rack and leap into the rafters. Olive edged slowly around a heap of furniture. Above her, peeping out from behind a crossbeam, was one bright green eye. "I can see you, you know," she told the green eye. "You might as well come out and talk like a sane person." A cat edged slowly onto the rafter. It was smallish and short hair and covered with splotches of every color in the cat fur rainbow. Its tail was patched with brown and gold. Its belly with the tips and the tips of its toes were white, except for one hind leg, which was mottled gray and orange. Its nose was crookedly divided into white and black, and one eye seemed to be covered with a dark swath of fur. But as the cat moved into the light, Olive saw that the dark fur was, in fact, a leather eye patch. "I'm Olive," she said to the cat. "I know. Horatio and I've met Leopold. And so you can tell me who you are, too." The cat blinked its uncovered eye at Olive for a moment, as if it were searching for some way around this conversation, and then he gave a little reluctant sigh. "Harvey," he said. "And you protect the attic, I suppose?" "Aye, lass, that I do," said the cat, seeming to regain a bit of his swagger. "Not that brings danger to this house shall enter under my watch." The cat gave a leap, and he grasped a hanging skein of rope, executing a mid-air somersault that was obviously intended to impress an audience. "I see," said Olive. "Sometimes he thinks he's a pirate," said a dry voice. Olive looked down to see Horatio gazing up at Harvey from the floor and felt her face break into a smile before he could help it. "Other times he claims to be one of the Three Musketeers." "The Three Musketeers," sniffed Harvey, taking a dignified pose on the rafter. "That's ridiculous. I said I was the cousin of the Count of Monte Cristo." "Horatio," said Olive, casually running her finger along the dusty edge of the mirror, "I was trying to ask you something important the last time I saw you." She glanced up at the cat, posing on the rafter. "Maybe Harvey could help me with the answer." Horatio gave a doubtful huff. I want to know about Aldous McMartin. I know he made the paintings. I want to know why. I want to know if Morton ever really knew him. I want to know everything. Olive stared hard at Horatio's unreadable green eyes. Please tell me the truth. Horatio looked up at Harvey. Harvey stroked an imaginary mustache. Tell the lady, he said. Are you mad? Snapped Horatio. Don't answer me, Harvey. That was a rhetorical question. A sudden loud whimper came from the far corner and Olive gave a start. What was that? What was what? Asked Harvey innocently. That sound. That whimpering sound. I have a guess, said Horatio with a sharp look at Harvey. Olive had already moved to the far corner of the attic and put on the spectacles, and now she was flipping through the stack of canvases. The whimpering sound had gotten a bit louder, and when she came to a painting of a weathered wooden barn surrounded by a high yellow grass and a grove of birch trees, Olive heard the whimpering clearly. She knew she had heard it before. It sounded like a dog that was sad or hurt, and through the small square panels of the barn's back window, she thought she could see something moving. Don't do it, Horatio warned. Don't go in. Olive thought of Morton shivering all alone in the dark forest. But something is whimpering in there, she argued. She propped the canvas against the wall. At least don't bring anything out with you this time, Horatio shouted. But Olive was already halfway into the picture. It was late autumn in the painting, and there was a nip in the air that brushed the long grass around the old brown barn. Most of the trees in the distance had dropped their leaves, but here and there, one leaf hung brown and red and gold. The whimpering had gotten louder now, and the edge of excitement entered as Olive pushed open the creaking barn door. The barn smelled like very old empty barns do, like damp wood and soil and dust, and something thumped and shuffled in one of the stalls. Olive followed the sound, tiptoeing through the cloudy yellow light, and inside the last stall there was a dog. It was a large, dark brown mutt that could have been equal parts bloodhound, spaniel, boxer, and St. Bernard. And when it saw Olive's face appear over the edge of the stall door, it gave a delighted yap. And when Olive pulled open the stall door and came inside, its tail thwacked the ground in a frenzy. The dog was clumsily tied up with a few strings and wires, but it didn't look hungry or thirsty or hurt. Olive supposed that the dogs in the painting don't get hungry very quickly anyway. While Olive untangled the knots, the dog licked her face ecstatically. Good boy. Down, boy, down, said Olive. The dog went on licking. What's your name? Who put you in here? The dog didn't answer. Olive felt a bit surprised, but she told herself that she shouldn't be. After all, in most houses, the surprising thing would be if a dog did talk, not if it didn't. Olive was just getting the final knot undone when the dog gave a throaty woof. His whole body, which had been shaking with happiness, became suddenly taut and still. Olive followed his eyes. A multicolored cat wearing an eye patch was seated atop the narrow stall wall. So me, old matey, whispered. We meet again. The dog gave a flying leap, and Harvey zoomed off like something fired from a musket. Yah! Olive heard the cat yell. That's right, you rump-fed rastabout. Try to get me. The dog and the cat crashed away through the barn. Olive came through the door just in time to see them leap through the frame back into the attic with the dog's jaws clamped around the cat's long tail. Harvey carooned off an antique chase and soared toward the rafters. The dog, who had lost his grip on Harvey, came crashing behind, knocking over the hat rack and managing to shake the cat down from his balancing beam. Olive, crawling back through the frame, watched the cat bolt down the staircase like a flying squirrel barely touching the floor. The dog was right on his tail. Harvey? No! Dog? Stop! Yelled Olive. Nobody listened. There was a hearty thump as one of both animals hit the attic door and tumbled through the painted arch and into the bedroom. Olive could still hear Harvey laughing like a maniac as the sound of eight galloping paws faded away. By the time Olive made it to the bottom of the attic stairs, the whole house was in chaos. Mr. and Mrs. Dunwoody had come rushing out of the library, alerted to the crashings coming from the parlor. Mr. Dunwoody was asking questions such as, "What on earth was that?" and not getting any answers. Mrs. Dunwoody was sneezing. Harvey had made a sharp right turn at the bottom of the staircase, leaping from the piano to the mantelpiece. The dog had tried to follow, but had fallen several feet short and landed on the chess table. Horatio had conveniently disappeared. Olive watched as Harvey catapulted from the hanging lamp through the door to the dining room. "Ha-ha!" the cat proclaimed. "No one can capture the wily Captain Flintlock!" The dog answered by knocking over a potted fern. Harvey and his pursuer skidded down the polished wood of the hallway, Harvey bounding onto a table and the dog jostling the table's legs so that the glass lamp teetered and then it fell with a crash. In the nick of time, Olive made a blockade with her body so that both animals were diverted back up the stairs. Two furry blurs barreled toward the pink bedroom, and once more, Olive heard Harvey's taunting, "Ha-ha!" Horatio, who had been waiting beside the painting, hopped through the arch and slammed the attic door neatly behind him. Mr. and Mrs. Dunwoody stood in the hallway surveying the damage. "Was that a cat?" asked Mr. Dunwoody. "That was absolutely a cat," said Mrs. Dunwoody. "And I believe there's also a dog," said Mr. Dunwoody. "I believe you're right," said Mrs. Dunwoody. Olive tried to slink out of sight. "Olive, dear," Mrs. Dunwoody called, "would you come here a moment, please?" Mr. Dunwoody picked up a frond of bedraggled fern and turned it over thoughtfully. "We're not saying that you let the cat and the dog in the cat and the dog, Olive," he began, "but we hope that you can see why we cannot have animals running through the house like this." "Yes, I see," said Olive, looking at her feet. Mrs. Dunwoody sneezed. "Good," Mr. Dunwoody gave Olive a businesslike nod. "Now, if you make sure both animals are out of this house, we won't have to talk about this again." Olive turned and shuffled away up the stairs. For a moment, Mr. and Mrs. Dunwoody looked down at the fragments of the glass lamp scattered across the hall like treacherous confetti. "How many pieces, dear?" Mr. Dunwoody asked Mrs. Dunwoody with a twinkle in her eyes. 313, said Mrs. Dunwoody. Mr. Dunwoody smiled at her lovingly. "You still got it, darling."